It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hockey! Yeah.
My favorite.
It's Judd's Hockey Show.
And welcome into Judd's Hockey Show. It's Zolgad here in the bowels of the XL Energy Center. It is AJ Fredrickson, a friend of the show, of course, frequent contributor, back in studio producing things and co-hosting today. Wild lose 5-2. Age, the 14-game, I believe it was a 14-game point streak for the Wild, has come to an end against a Boston Bruins team that is a lot of fun to watch. And I believe the term that you kids use today is referred to as a wagon. Is that the correct term?
Yes.
The Boston Bruins are a wagon?
They're a full-on wagon. I wish Wild were as big of a wagon as the Boston Bruins.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So as Jeremy points out there in our comments section, yes, not having Kirill Kaprizov and certainly Brodin, which I think is a huge loss, played a role today in a 5-2 loss that featured two no goals because of offside challenges. We will get to that. My number one takeaway, though, is this, Age. That was a really fun hockey game. If you're a Wild fan, it's bitter. The fans here, obviously very PO'd at the officials for the two overturned offside calls. I'm not sure what your takeaway from watching it was, but I thought that was an incredibly entertaining afternoon hockey game.
Yeah. I missed a majority of the first period just because I was making my way into the station here today. But from what I did see for like the second half of the first and the rest of the game was, like you said, it was entertaining. I know this, if you just look at the stats and the box score and everything like that, you're going to think the Wild were in, never in a chance to win this game. I think they played at times relatively well, but at the same time, for those highs, there were equal lows, and those just happened to impact the game just as much. I know a lot of people are going to be upset about the two overturned goals, even the second one, because on the television broadcast, they didn't really show an angle where it was undisputable evidence that that right. was offsides. You got to remember, right. though, everybody, that the NHL facilities, especially up in there, up in the press box area, they have that replay room. They have tens upon 20s of more camera angles than us, the average viewer, has. So if they overturn it, it's for a good reason. It's not rigged. It's not the league out against the Wild trying to back the Bruins.
They are Bruins fans. Everybody knows it. It's been decided months ago the Bruins are going to win the cup. It's all a bunch of garbage. What are you talking about? No, you're right. In fact, let's get right to that topic, okay? So the first one, and I guess I just want to say this about offside challenges. The first one that was wiped out, which would have made it, I think, if I'm not mistaken, just trying to go through my notes here quickly, I believe it would have made it 2-1. Yes, it would have made it 2-0. Wild. Dumba scored from in front off a Johansson feed, and we'll get to him. I thought he had a marvelous game. And what would have been a power play goal was wiped out. I believe it was Dewar was offside. And Age, that is the reason why that rule is there, because the challenge was absolutely correct. Connor Dewar has to stay onside there. Did it impact the goal directly? No, but they have that challenge there because Dewar came in offside. Like, it was just cut and dry. That took 30 seconds or 20 seconds. Okay. The second one I think is a little bit more hanky, and I'm trying to recall now, Age, what was the one we had a possession issue a couple of weeks ago? I want to say it was here at the X that wiped out another goal, and Dean was cool with it. A couple weeks ago, it wiped out a goal. It was an issue of possession at the blue line, so it wasn't just a clear cut offside.
It was the Jared Spurgeon overtime goal, correct?
That's what it was. Yes. Thank you very much. I'm getting old. I forget things. So, and in that case, that was a possession. This was Boldy. Now, I will lay some of the fault at his feet, because Boldy inexplicably passed the puck when he should have just carried it in. The trailer was not offside. So his guy, the guy to his left, was fine. So if Boldy just maintains possession, which he could have, instead of trying to throw the pass at the blue line, that's a goal. But the more I think about this, I don't know that possession and an issue like that, which, by the way, was called onside by the linesman. So it was not like he saw it. Now, you're right. They've got a lot more replay reviews and potential. But I would almost like to see the offside challenge confined to if another skater is offside. So, like, if I've got the puck at the last second and I pass it, and now the question is, did I have possession when I passed it, or did I then proceed the puck in? And again, if Boldy had just taken the puck in, they're fine. But I would like to see the GMs revisit that rule, because I do believe it's very important. If a guy just comes in offside, that's cool. It should be wiped out. Do or did that. No question, no goal. The Boldy one, even if they got it right, I don't know what's the spirit of the rule to determine possession at the blue line that involves you and essentially putting yourself offside. So that's where I sort of struggle with it. It's not that they blew the call. The Wild fans here, 19,000 plus, largest crowd season, believe that they did blow the call. I don't think it's that they blew the call. I just don't know if that was ever God's intention of replay to say Matt Boldy passed the puck a tick early with possession. So he lost possession and therefore put himself offside. I wouldn't mind if you couldn't, like, as long as the official on the ice calls that onside, I wouldn't mind either way if that was not a challengeable call. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you to an extent, because at the same time, the other side of it is just if he holds onto that for a breath longer, there's no conversation. There's no conversation whatsoever. But yeah, going back to even the Spurgeon call, it's one of those things where it's almost taking the realness out of the game. If that, like, there's human error in sports. There's human error in sports. Mm-hmm. If the trained official doesn't whistle it down there,
right,
and it comes down to you need like second by second, millisecond by millisecond that's frames. That's where I think the game is. I'm not going to say the game is gone by any means, but that's not what was intended. The intention, I feel like, for the review is another body was just blatantly off and it was missed by the official. Not this like fraction. Was it on his tape? Was it off? Does he have possession? So, yes, I do. I do understand your argument there. But at the same time, Boldy can totally negate that whole thought process of just.
And you're right.
That much longer.
Yeah. I guess my thought is this. If that was game 7 of a Stanley Cup final, OK. Do I want to be talking about it's overtime? Do I want to be talking about, well, the possession was incredibly close. He put himself in offside barely, but we're not quite sure, but no goal. Now, I believe that the sort of the genesis of the entire offside review, at least a little portion, goes back way before your time, AJ. I think it was the first of the Islanders' 4 consecutive cups, game 6 overtime, Philadelphia and the Islanders. And the linesman missed a blatant offside. I believe it was the overtime GWGOT, you know, so this was, and yes, you're right. Like, that's blatant. It's a miss. It's not, he didn't screw up on purpose, but wouldn't you like to put yourself in a position to say, you know what, bad call or bad no call. We got this right. I just don't know if I want to be talking about the Rangers playing in game 7 of the Stanley Cup and Patrick Kane scored, but it's no goal because Patrick Kane passed the, you know, it's just, so I'm with you. I think it's all the interpretation and in the importance of things. That being said, all of that being said, to make this very, very clear, the Wild lost the game.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not for one second, the Bruins are really damn good. And AJ, when you look, and I've watched them a few times, but when you are handed the good old line charts, Boston Bruins line charts, and you go first line, Bergeron, Marchand, DeBrusk. Bergeron, DeBrusk both scored. I think Marchand had a couple of apples. Mm-hmm. Second line, Krejci, Pavel Zacha, Pasta. Third line, I'll keep going. Charlie Coyle, who I've got a thought on in one second. Mm-hmm. Tyler Bertuzzi, who they just got from Detroit, who is a top 6 guy with almost any team but the Bruins. And then the guy that scored the empty net goal, Trent Frederick, who scored his 16th goal, okay? The blue line, Grizzlick, McAvoy. Second unit, Hampus Lindholm, Brandon Carlo. Third unit, Orlov, who they just got from Washington, who's going to be in town tomorrow afternoon, and Connor Clifton, and Ullmark and Swayman in goal, and Ullmark play today was brilliant and is going to win the Vezina. That, ladies and gentlemen, that is a wagon. I just read you. I mean,
That could be an all-star game.
Yes. And I got a question for you. I got a question for you and all of you watching this, and we certainly do appreciate that. Where was this Charlie Coyle? Did you see him today?
There was one move in particular. He received a pass in the neutral zone. He worked around, I believe it was Klingberg or Goligoski, but then he drove
not hard work, but then he drove
like a Mack truck to the goal, a powerhouse. He looked like a steam engine that wouldn't refuse to be knocked off the tracks. He drove hard to the goal, and that is the play that I think we expected from him and even a guy like Jordan Greenway before the move. It's so weird that changes scenery, and maybe it's the coaching how it's handled. But
I think it's one thing, dude. I think it's not the coaching. I think it's having guys named Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand in your locker room. Whom I guess the day he walked in, and look, Coyle is still not perfect, but like what we saw today is what you wanted for a long time. I think the day he walked in, those guys pulled him aside and said, the BS is done here, dude. You're not in Club Med no more. You know, Zach and Ryan's country club ain't us. Mm-hmm. Because you know what? You're right. When I watched Coyle work, that's what we wanted. It wasn't even the results. It was the work ethic. I mean, and he is centering the third line. It's just, it's so frustrating because that's, you know, that guy. And yes, as the commenter says here, he has matured, but I don't think that maturity was ever going to take place here with that team. Now it might, but not with that team. But my goodness gracious, when I watch that third line center now, that is absolutely perfect. Kaprizov, who people I know, in fact, I think the TNT crew was saying that, you know, in some ways, Kaprizov being out is perfect because they scored 8 goals against the Blues who stink. And that was a fun game. But today you saw why you were never glad that Kirill Kaprizov is out. So that's number one. Number two is Brodin has to get back soon, I hope. Yeah. They miss him so much. And watching John Merrill take 2 second period penalties, which were both dumb, I would actually be tempted, and I don't think that they will because Dean won't, but I'd actually, when Brodin gets back, I'd be tempted to sit him and continue to play Kalen and Goose. And I've been the number one scratch Goose guy, but Goligoski right now is no question playing better than John Merrill. But Brodin, just the calmness he brings back there, just the poise, it is so missed.
Yeah, and I'm not going to say that his absence is more important than Krill's because it's not. But it can't be overstated just how much this team does miss a guy like Jonas Brodin on the blue line. This, like you said, the calmness and just his repertoire of being able to cover for guys who lack maybe his capability defensively, almost playing a position and a half at times. It's so tough, and you got to wonder if you have a guy like him out there for that Bergeron goal, the fourth goal, I'm not gonna harp on Kalen Addison because I think at times. Today, he did look okay. That play, it is partly on him, but it's not, I want to say, all on him because there's
who
guys.
Goofed up?
Say again?
I think a forward, who goofed up? I think a forward was supposed to also at least play a role in defending Bergeron, and we didn't see it.
It was it was Sundqvist who didn't pick him up and maybe Steele. It was one of those two guys. Okay. But, that was just a defensive breakdown. It was a weak ring around the boards to a weak board battle along the half wall. And then Kalen hugs the strong side post and goes down. And then the backside is just wide open and nobody catches the trailing Bergeron coming in for a wide open chance. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. So 4 goals by Boston with Gustafson in net. Mm-hmm. The first one, which is just a great shot by DeBrusk, who I think a year ago requested a trade and now with the new coach in Boston is just playing fantastic. The first one was on Dumba because he's behind the net and he tries to clear and he doesn't. In fact, he doesn't come close. That then leads to the Bruins taking possession and getting the puck to DeBrusk in the slot. Again, I'm guessing a forward supposed to be on DeBrusk there, but Dumba's got to get that clear going. He does not. Like you said, the Bergeron goal is a bad goal defensively. A breakdown.
Yeah.
And so those two in particular were disturbing. Brodin comes back hopefully soon. Middleton, I guess, is sick. He's missed two games now. He comes back hopefully soon. Mm-hmm. Pair him back with Spurgeon. So your defensive pairings, I guess, theoretically, or in my perfect world, you get Middleton back with Spurge. You're probably going to go, I would probably go Brodin Klingberg. I'm guessing that they'll go Brodin Dumba because that's Dean. And then I would play Goligoski, and I would be open to playing Kalen again because I just think John Merrill's not playing well.
Yeah. No, he's been rough recently, and who knows, maybe a scratch is going to be the thing that can, you know, get the ticker going again. But, really quick, while you mentioned, and we kind of have been talking about Addison, would you have liked to see him out there on that 5-on-3?
Yes. And in fact, did you see, so, and this is where Dean can be slow to adjust and it drives me crazy. Did you see the goal that made it what? 3-2 at the time. Yeah. 3-2, the power play goal. Mm-hmm. Russo tweeted this. I tweeted it, but he had more information than I did. He said that was the first time all season that Dean has put the second power play out to start a power play. So that goal was Sundqvist's goal off a nice feed by Goudreau. But that's the first time, according to Mike, that they have not had their first power play out there to start. And so to answer your question, I think I would have liked to see them be more proactive. That 5-on-3, what I found really distasteful about that was, so that penalty came at the end of the second period. And they had, if I'm not mistaken, they had 1:24. So they had a long 5-on-3 once Orlov cleared the puck and it didn't hit the glass and he got a delay of game. And did you see how much passing they went back to doing? Zuccarello passed up another shot, which is just it drives me nuts. Dude, Kaprizov's out. You shoot. Don't try and you don't need to set up a nice goal. But they were passing the puck. So I would have liked to have seen quicker action to get that group off the ice. Because if you dudes are going to pass it, guess what? I'm passing up your opportunity to play as long as you possibly want on the power play. Because that 5-on-3 was huge.
Yeah.
And they did not generate nearly enough because they were, again, looking for the perfect goal, which, again, is not how this team can play or afford to play.
4-for-15 on 5-on-3 man advantages this year for the Wild. 15 chances, 5-on-3 is the most of any team in the NHL. They've converted 4 times. And the one that we saw today, I feel like that has to be a higher number of conversion rate. But also the passing, like you mentioned, why are we passing so much? You're treating it like it's a standard 5-on-4, and I understand you want to draw them out of position for the chance. And there's got to be a better way to go about that. There has to be a better way to go about that than just working across the top of the zone. And okay, now we'll work it back to Klingberg and he's going to kick it back to Boldy and Boldy's going to look. And now Zuccarello's got
it. Boldy wants a pass too. Yeah. Matt wants a pass too. It's in his gut to pass.
Shoot the puck. Just shoot the
Zuccarello.
Puck.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, I think the justification for Matt's is, well, if Kirill's playing, we're trying to set up Kirill, which bugs me already, okay? But without Kirill, who are you setting up? Boldy? He just wants to pass it back to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, Matt's has had a funny season because there are times he's looked good, but there's two things about him that drive me crazy for 2022-23. The first one is the refusal to shoot. You're not a center, dude. I know that you guys are good, but like right now you have to shoot. The second thing is, and I don't know if this stat is kept or not, I'm willing to bet that guy is among the National Hockey League leaders among forwards in defensive zone turnovers. I want to say he did it again against the Blues. He picks the damnedest times to try to get cute with the puck. And that's sort of the problem with him overall, because he's tremendously talented and he can make some great plays, but you know, his want to be creative can drive me crazy. And there is nothing worse than, you know, bank the puck in your own zone off the boards, get it out. You don't have to ice it, get it out to neutral. And as football people say, live to fight another day. Where Matt Zuccarello, you know, you see some of these passes he makes in his own zone and they get picked off right in the slot, low slot, high slot. And that's the type of thing that you cannot afford in playoff games. That will cost you a game. You can't fault the goaltender for that, you know, off a goal, I mean.
This is from moneypuck.com. I don't know how often you use their site. I love it. They have, nice on the season, not including today, I would assume, Matt Zuccarello has 10 defensive zone giveaways.
Okay.
Leading
it the, feels like more, but
leading the team right now is 22, Matthew Dumba, John Klingberg, 19, Jared Spurgeon, 15, Matthew Boldy with 14. So, I mean, he's not even in the top four, but it, you're right. It feels like it's more than 10, does it not?
Yes, it does. And, but he is in the top four of forwards, correct?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Like the defensemen are a different thing and I'm not absolving them, but I mean, they clearly handle the puck way more. And I'm not surprised that any of those names defensively that you read are on that list because it feels like we do see it. I mean, Klingberg is an adventure. I love the dangle, you know, when he works it at the top of the blue line on the power play, he gets that wrist shot off. I love that shot on the power play. I think that's fantastic, but he is a literal hold your breath guy, which is why I think Brodin would help him because Brodin could sort of cover there. There are very few times when I am here so I can see the entire ice from the press box, AJ, watching Klingberg from the press box in his own zone where I say, this looks good. This looks safe. I'm ordinarily saying, oh God, oh no, going to see it again, aren't we? And the trade, you know, I still like the trade. Mm-hmm. I do think that offensively he adds something for sure. There's no question about that. But yeah, it's a defensive adventure. And that's the problem now. When you have both Brodin primarily, but Middleton out as well, it becomes defensive zone adventures. And that's where you're like, you can ask Gustafsson and Fleury to make great saves. And Gustafsson made some nice ones today, but you're not going to beat the Boston Bruins No. when the puck looks like it, when the puck looks like it might be a grenade in your own zone.
Klingberg, I still like the trade as well. The other guy who's really been impressed me with coming over before the trade deadline, Marcus Johansson. He has been rock solid. And today he looked amazing. He was everywhere. Yeah. If it wasn't for the two overturned goals, he would have had, I believe, 4 points. But he, when he's out there, he's having that impact of he's making himself known. He's contributing. He's developing offensive play, it seems, at times. And almost at times, like willing something out of nothing. He's been at the time it was a very like, all right, that was a then sure. We'll bring him back. Whatever.
I thought the same thing.
He has been, I'm not going to say a revelation, but in terms of what we've seen the past couple of games, we're on the fringe of revelation. We're on the fringe of it.
Yes, he had, in my opinion, going back to the shortened pandemic season that he was with the Wild and then obviously got hurt against the Golden Knights in that playoff series. This was the best game I've seen him have. He's played well here in his second goal round. I thought what Johansson did today, though, is easily the most impressed I've been. He did accidentally tip that goal in. That was a centering pass for McAvoy that went in off his stick. Gustafsson was going down, and I think he was trying to slide to the side because he thought the puck was going to go through to McAvoy. It didn't. It went between Gustafsson's legs. But I thought Johansson played fantastic. I thought he was all over the ice in the first period. That line was absolutely outstanding. And yeah, he has been, because I'm with you. When Bill made the trade again to get him back, I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. He's been really impressive. He clearly was banged up badly the last time around. He's not now. So he's played well. I also like Sundqvist, not because he stands out, although he did score the goal day. I like Sundqvist because of this age. He knows what his role should be and he does what Greenway didn't, which is, I feel like he shows up.
Yeah.
Like he's not a sexy player and he's not a guy where you're like, can you believe that move? I mean, Johansson has speed, like Johansson has more skill, but Sundqvist just knows what he's supposed to do and he does it. With Greenway, I felt like it was a nightly will he or won't he. With Sundqvist so far, I feel like, you know what? He knows this role. It's not supposed to be a sexy role. It's a grinder role, but he serves it. And that's what you never knew. Because Greenway, at his worst, would be a 100% detriment to your team. Sundqvist, I think, at his worst, is just he's there, but he's not necessarily a detriment to the team.
It's a good night when you're not really talking about him. And I think he's fine with that, like you mentioned. I mentioned this on the JHS trade deadline special a couple weeks back, where it seems like now Marcus Johansson is, if you're at a restaurant, he's the fajitas coming out of the kitchen. There's sizzle. It's drawing attention. People are looking at it. Oh, I wish I had that. Oscar Sundquist is the chicken sandwich. Old Reliable. It's hard to mess it up because he's going to get there. You're going to be somewhat satisfied with it. And you're going to go home pretty happy. You know, you didn't make a bad choice. And that's what he's been doing. He's playing a decent game. I'm not ever like, why is he on the ice? Right. Like, it's okay. Right. That's fine. He's out there. I don't necessarily expect an offensive outburst, but defensively, he's going to get the job done and he's going to go back, take a breather, and somebody else is going to come out and do the job that we probably need when we're down. So,
exactly right. All right.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Tailored to your schedule, customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little you need. You can pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up those springtime goals. Head to factormeals.com/Judd50 and use code Judd50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code Judd50 at factormeals.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Before we get back to the topic of goaltending today, I want to remind folks that when age says reliable, that's what we're looking for in life. And I'm going to tell you right now, one thing that is entirely reliable is the work that my friends from Livia Weight Control Centers do. And it's important that I said weight control. So this isn't a diet. This is not a fad. This is not a quick fix. This is a fix that 100% works, but then the dietitians will help you maintain that weight loss. And that's the most important thing. We've all lost weight. The question is, can we keep that weight off? Livia, dedicated to doing exactly that. And if you join now, guess what? Special deal for you. 8 weeks free. So you get the first 8 weeks for free if you join now. 855-GO-LIVEA, Livia.com, Livea.com. Again, 8 weeks free. I'm telling you, if it works for me, it can work for you. So check it out, and you will look and feel great for summer. Your take on the goaltending of Philip Gustafson today?
He was making stops that I expect them to make, and I'm no goalie expert. When they traded for Gustafson, I kind of can do the scouting. I will take more of the crowdsource knowledge rather than give my own opinion on breaking it down, just because I never played goalie growing up. My only expectation is I expect him to make the first stop. Like, if it's a, for the most part, I understand that there's a lot of bodies out front, but if you make the first stop, I can't really fault you for the second or third attempt going in a lot of the time, because that ends up typically falling on the defenseman or other players out in front of him. If we look at kind of the analytical side today, yeah, he was slightly off. He was just above three expected goals against, allowed four. So I'm not going to say he played bad. He played all right. It wasn't a standout performance. It's not a highlight reel performance. He did have a couple nice saves here and there, but I wouldn't say he played bad. You know, it's like we talked about, I'm not going to fault him for the fourth goal, the Bergeron goal, where it's Patrice Bergeron wide open in the slot. What is he supposed to do?
Yeah, I would say this. I think goals won by DeBrusk, and as you just talked about, Bergeron, the fourth goal, are more breakdowns by the team. Like, it would be nice if he could flash the glove, right, and stop that DeBrusk shot. It was a great shot, but I'm not going to fault him. That puck needs to get out. Those players need to be accounted for. The Pasternak goal, which was a power play goal, is pasta. I mean, he's unbleeping believable.
47 on the year. It's hard to stop that.
And the Krejci goal was a fluke, because Krejci was trying to pass to McAvoy, and Johansson tipped it. And so he steered it between Gustafson's leg. Gustafson was actually trying to cheat. It would have been better if the pass had gone through, because Gustafson at least would have had a fighting chance there if DeBrusk had got the shot off, because he read it correctly. But of course, then when it gets tipped, it goes through his leg. So I'm with you. He wasn't outstanding. You are going to need, you know, some of the games that he's played, I felt like a week or a week plus ago, some of the games that Gustafson has played, they're going to need that in the playoffs. Like, you're going to need him to make some of those saves. It is going to be imperative. But as Tyler says here, and I'm inclined now to agree, I have gone back and forth on this. You talk about back and forth thoughts. As Tyler says, Flower is starting, no doubt, in game one. Right now, I would say Tyler is correct. As good as Gustafson played, and I know that we anointed him the must game one starter a couple weeks back, and I do not think that the Flower played great in St. Louis. He's going to get the net tomorrow against Washington. If the playoffs were to start today, as they like to say, I think Tyler is spot on. It is Marc-Andre Fleury in goal for game one. Doesn't mean Gustafson won't play. It does mean I am now back to the veteran.
I agree with that partially. On the other side of things, I'm going to look at the opponents that Marc-Andre Fleury has had the past few times out. I mean, you mentioned St. Louis, they're bad. I know they put up eight, but he also, you know, he was in net for what, five?
He wasn't great.
It's not, no question. It's not like he has been lights out. He will make spectacular saves. It seems like in every performance, he does have that kind of X factor of, you know who he is. He's got that Hall of Fame repertoire.
Right.
I think Gustafson, like I said, it's the Boston Bruins. It's one of the best hockey teams I've seen in a long time. They, like you said, they're a wagon. He let up goals that I think you expect any goalie to probably let up against this great team. I think they finished with what, about 38, maybe just over 40 shots today.
Yep. Yes.
A lot of those were high danger. And he held his own for the most part. So I'd say it's a coin flip right now, but it's probably just for the namesake, you're going to go with Fleury. Yeah.
You know Dean's itching to start Flower, don't you? You know he is. You know he's just itching to give him the start. You know he's itching to scratch Kalen. You know what he's itching to do. He's Dean. If this was a different coach, I might say that there's a good chance Gustafson starts. But, you know, Gustafson, here's the problem, and this was bound to happen. I would say in the past week or so, both have experienced regression. And when that takes place, I think he's going to default to the veteran. Okay, so let's wrap this up by putting things in context here. So the Avalanche smoked, not surprisingly, Detroit today. They are now in second place. 40 wins in 68 games, 86 points, okay? The Wild played their 70th game. They are on 39 wins, 86 points as well, but because of one, the extra win, and two, the game in hand, the Avs are in second place. Dallas has 87 points in 69 games and plays Calgary tonight. So, in other words, the Wild has a golden opportunity against a Washington team that's not nearly, in fact, I don't think that they're a playoff team, that's not nearly as good as this Bruins team tomorrow afternoon to get itself in excellent shape again. But this is going to be fun. It does look like with the Jets' struggles, AJ, it looks like the Wild, unless they completely collapse, which I don't think they're going to do, will be second or third. At that point, I think you should say your prayers that Colorado passes everybody. I want out on the Avs. Sorry, I just do. So if I'm the Wild, I either want to win the division and get the wild card game or round, or I want to finish in a position where Dallas falls, because I would take Dallas. Like, that's a tough beat, but it's a doable beat. The Avs are flipping the switch, dude. I'm not sure about you. I just don't have a lot of interest as I try and as the Wild tries to get past the first round and God knows how long. I don't have a lot of interest in facing Colorado in round one. I don't even care if I have home ice in that series.
Yeah, no, if you're going up against this Avalanche team that is getting healthier, hitting their stride, finding that groove, they're looking to go back to back. And I think they have a team to do it when healthy. It's really impressive. I will say this, that they were as hurt as much as they have been so far, and they're 1 point back of Dallas and they have a game in hand. So, I mean, I might as well just chalk it up to say they're in first place right now. I think they probably can outlast Dallas and make that surge comeback to get the one spot. Cause I, And I would like to see that, because if the Wild are going to be 2 or 3 in matchup against Dallas, that's a better pairing, I think, for them than Colorado. Yeah. The chances of moving on to a second round, I'm not going to say they skyrocket, but they increase, because Colorado is just such a good team top to bottom. I mean, you mentioned the roster of this Bruins club. You could do the same thing with Colorado. It's a similar style. They have the flair, they have the superstar, but they also have those gritty guys. Like everybody, you know, from the fourth line center to the, you know, the superstar up front, they know their role and they execute it so well on a nightly basis where you might as well just pack it up and start booking tee times if you match up with Colorado in the first round.
And it, just to be clear, the Stars are good. Jake Oettinger scares me. Like he is there. He is going to be, well, I think it's fair to say that Dean has a decision to make, right? And look, Flower or Gus could get super hot. But if you are Pete DeBoer in Dallas, you know, Jake Oettinger's your guy. He's been great. Mm-hmm. If he continues that, I mean, he bleeping stood on his head against the Flames in the playoffs last spring. He was, Oettinger was unbelievable. It's one of the best goaltending performances I've seen in a series, and they lost, right? So I'm not saying that you're going to get by the Stars for sure. I'm just saying Colorado, and like Colorado is becoming, I think, a little bit like Tampa did, which is we'll get in the playoffs and then and then it starts, you know, because if you just won the cup, the dumbest thing that you can do is go, you know, full speed in the regular season. And they've had a ton of guys out. You're right. But I mean, you know, I think Colorado has this to a large point figured out. And I could see that being basically 5 games, maybe 6 and done. I think Dallas, it could go 6 or 7. And again, Kirill has to be back too.
Yes.
You're toast. If Kirill and Brodin are affected into the playoffs, it's over in the first round, or at least it should be. But that point being made, I do think that against Dallas, you've got a chance. Against Colorado, I hate your chances. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah. But if you would have told me 3 hours ago that the Wild weren't going to pick up any points against this Boston Bruins team and their 14-game franchise record-setting point streak came to an end, I would have believed you. It just, recapping this in a few words, it was a game I think they probably could have won or even forced overtime. They just, the lows outweighed the highs today.
Yes. Yes. And the defensive breakdowns are not acceptable.
Yeah.
Like that's what it comes down to. And that's why you need two of your better defensemen, keyword being defensemen, back, as well as Kaprizov. All right. We are done. Age, thanks much as always. Judd's Hockey Show. I'm sure we'll be back soon with Declan, I would guess. Don't forget Jesse Pierce, scheduled to return on Wednesday as well. She wore shorts here today to cover the game, like some shorts. I have no idea. Nice looking, so dressy. But it's cold outside. It's cold inside. And she told me spring is here and I don't care. Good for her.
There we go.
We are done. We will talk to you soon here on Score North.